welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
Yeah, episode 54, the episode that, what is it?
That shall remain nameless?
Yeah.
At least we don't have a name for it.
That's right. No name. The no name episode.
Yeah.
All right.
So this week was a little busy for me. I'm running a data recovery for a lady, and it's doing about 10 gigs a day, and it's a 250 gig drive. So it's going to take about 25 days to run that. And then I can't just stop it halfway because she only has, say, 100 gigs, because Windows writes the stuff all over the drive.
Is it an XP?
No, it's Windows 7.
Windows machine. 7, really?
Yeah.
And the hard drive just went bad?
Yep.
Okay.
And it went bad about 3 months out of warranty.
Oh,
yeah.
That's terrible.
So I'm getting that back for her. And it's actually, everything seems to be working. It's just taking a long time.
Who's a hard drive manufacturer?
I don't know. I haven't pulled it out yet. It's a Dell machine, but I don't know if they...
Probably Western Digital. Dell uses a lot of Western Digital.
Yeah.
At least their server line. All of our servers come with
Western Digital. Didn't they used to be really good?
They are really good.
They go back and forth. I've seen Seagate ones. And
really? Because all of our Dell servers come with Western Digital drives in them.
All right. So that's
going to take a while. And then I did a little bit of scrapping. I have all these power cords at home.
Did you say scrapbooking?
Scrapping.
Oh, scrapping.
No, scrapping. I have a ton of power cords. So you clip off the ends, and then you throw them in a bag, and then you take it to a metal recycle, and they give you money.
No, these are power cords that don't work.
No, they all work. It's just... Every single device you get
comes with another power cord. So I literally have probably 1,000 power cords here at the school that I'm not using. They're in tubs out in the warehouse.
Yeah, and that's what you should do.
These could be computer power cords. They could be...
They're universal. Computer, printer, whatever. Whatever needs a power cord.
Yep, and you get about 75 cents per pound.
Even with all the rubber and everything on it?
Yeah, it's coated copper. So if you had stripped all the rubber off, then you get $3 a pound. But they, so I was able to pay for my drinks last night at the Ubuntu release party. Me and Kim,
Kim
paid
went
for
it.
Yeah, $45 worth of stuff. And
yeah.
And Alex went, except for Mary left
I
before
was there.
Kim came
well,
in.
Well, yeah, I was there, but I had my cold, so I had to go home.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was going to lose my voice.
We couldn't be that lucky, Mary.
I know, I didn't want to disappoint you. I wanted to disappoint you.
So,
I'm feeling kind of bad, but
it was
a fun get-together.
Yeah, it was fun. I went to the thing last night with my Ubuntu hat on. Because they gave it to me. I was the 100th person to join the Loco about 8 years ago. No, I'm sorry, 2008. So it's 6 years ago? 4 years ago. I can't do math right now. Anyways, so I'm wearing that hat, and Mary walks in and says, or just starts talking to me and does this. And then I see her hat. And Mary got us hats. It says,
yes,
the Sunday Morning,
Sunday
Linux,
morning
Review.
Linux Review.
And it has our names on them.
That's right, on the back, yeah. That's what I got for you guys when I went to Chicago.
Yep.
I didn't want to come back with those shirts that says, my friend went to Chicago and all I got was this lousy shirt. So get you lousy hats.
They're cool hats.
So.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, yeah, so I did go to Chicago, and this past week I spent some time prepping my computer for Linux from scratch, because I'm going to go ahead and undertake that project. So I got a little bit of that done.
So is it, instead of being reviews, is it going to be updates on Linux from scratch?
Actually, it's going to be both. I'm going to be very energetic.
Burning at both ends of the candle?
Oh, yeah, you look very energetic today.
Yeah, so anyway, but I was doing that. What else? I guess that's pretty much it, I guess. Oh, going to the Tigers games, a couple of them.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Do you have season tickets to the Tigers?
No. We know somebody who does have season tickets, and they had to buy.
In order to get postseason, you
have to get four tickets. So what happens is they have these extra tickets, so they know people. So we're in that circle. So So it's kind
of
fun.
Friends of ours have season tickets too, but we're not that good of friends because we haven't been to one playoff game.
But anyway, so last week was kind of And I've been sick, so
yeah,
low key. What about you, Matt? I've been waiting to hear what you're
I actually haven't had any kind of adventurous week at all.
But that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. I was afraid too many of those. You're going to lose your job.
No. No.
They like you there, though, right?
Yes, they do.
That's good.
Good.
So.
All right. So I guess we're on to...
Oh, we do have one other thing. I'm sorry.
Oh.
My daughter at Loyola University for her stats class is... got a project where she needs to get as many people as possible, at least 25, and we're not near 25 yet, to fill out a survey, an online survey.
That's right, I took it.
Yes, and it's on my Google Plus.
I'm going to.
It's on my Google Plus, and it's also, and the answer to the first question when you go there, by the way, is Amanda Enders. And then if you're not in the U.S. and you click on the voting question with the drop-down box, if you scroll down far enough, there are options for you there. So, and it's at SurveyMonkey, and it's T7LKD6C at SurveyMonkey. So, that's it. Go take my daughter's survey.
All right. So what class is that for?
Stats.
Ooh, statistics.
Mm. Which she's actually acing because it's exactly the same as her AP stats course was in high school.
Really?
Really?
Exactly, yes.
So you're paying extra credits just for her to take the same class? What is that, $400 credit hour?
I don't know. No, it's not by the credit hour. It's just they charge you so much to go there, and you've got to just be a full-time student. You could take 16 or you could take 12. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I know they used to do that. A lot of colleges and universities used to do that, but majority of them around here have gone away to
it's a private school, so they still do it that way.
Well, I went to a private college also, Siena Heights, and it was per credit.
Really?
Yeah, no. It was $300 credit hour.
Loyola doesn't do it that way. Hmm. They charge you at a very exorbitant amount.
Yeah.
And then you get to just go to school there.
So are you making her take 32 credits?
No. I was shooting for 24, but I got shot down.
Yeah, especially when 12 credit hours is a full-time. Yeah.
She has taken 16, I think. So 15, maybe.
All right.
Yeah, I drove by there when I was in Chicago last weekend. I heard the cash register.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Did you see the big wolf?
Looking. I don't know if I saw that.
They had a big blow-up wolf right on the curve. You know when you're coming up, and then you turn right, and then
I know that.
And then
I go there often.
And then it curves around. I've only been there once. And then it curves around to the left.
And I was right on Main Street. I was around the fringe of the university.
Oh, you weren't on. You didn't go up like what's the main drag in Chicago, like downtown Chicago?
Michigan Avenue.
Yes, right on the water. No, Lakeshore Drive.
Oh, Lakeshore.
When you take Lakeshore Drive all the way up, then when you get to the end of Lakeshore Drive, you go right. Onto North something, it's called.
If you take Lakeshore Drive up and you go right, you go into Lake Michigan.
No, not at the top.
Oh, okay.
Lakeshore Drive keeps going this way, and then you go right, and you stay along the lake, because Loyola University is right on the lake.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And
I don't think I went that far.
You didn't go through campus then.
No, I did not. Okay. I saw the edge of it, because there was like a big sign. So.
And the wolf.
And I thought
the
of
wolf's
you.
On the curve. Big blow up wolf.
All right.
Because their mascot's a wolf, but they're the Ramblers. Figure that one out.
Maybe it's a wolf driving a Rambler. <Isn't it laughs> I don't know. That's a tough one. It's a tough one to figure out.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
That's the right one. The Colonel News. This week, we have two release candidates, because last week we recorded on Saturday, and there was a release candidate on Sunday. So we're going to start off with, on Sunday, the 14th of October, 2012, at 15:27 Pacific Daylight Time, Linus Torvalds released Kernel 3.7-RC1. This is what he had to say about it. The UAPI include file cleanups. The idea is that the stuff exported to user space should now be found under include/UAPI, and arch $arch/include UAPI. let's hope it actually works, because otherwise this was just a totally pointless pain in the ass. And regardless, I'm definitely done with these kinds of let's do massive cleanup of the include files forever. ARM64 architecture inclusion, let's see if it takes off. Let's see how many years we'll need before the ARM people do what every single other 64-bit arch has ever done, merge back with the 32-bit code. As usual, people claimed that there were tons of reasons why this time was different, and as usual, it's almost certainly going to be BS. In the end, and a few years from now, we'll have big patches trying to merge it all back. But maybe it really was different this time. Snicker. Linus Torvalds.
Mm. So is that the kernel quote, or was that the kernel journal?
That's what he says about the... Whenever there's a release candidate, I always put what he... I don't even put all of it. I just put
a portion of his announcement about it.
Okay. So
we haven't had one for a while, Tony. But now we have two this week.
Ooh.
So on to the next one. On Saturday the 20th of October, 2012, at 12:41 Pacific Daylight Time, Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.7-RC2, and here's what he had to say about it. Anyway, it's been roughly a week, and RC2 is out. The most noticeable thing tends to be fixing various fallout issues. There's lots of patches to finish up and fix the fallout from the UAPI include file reorganization, for example. But there's also some changes to how module signing is done, etc. In pure lines, the UAPI stuff, even with rename detection, dwarfs everything else. And the diff stat of RC2 is very unusual. Instead of the normal 65% drivers, random, everything else, it's 50% architectural patches, largely UAPI header files, 30% include more UAPI header files, and 20% everything else. The main line is 3.7-RC2. And stable updates. We had one stable update on Thursday, the 18th of October, 2012, at 00:00 and 06 minutes, British Standard Summertime. Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.32, with 141 files changed, 1,812 lines inserted, and 791 lines deleted. And our kernel quote of the week comes from Greg Crowe Hartman himself. He says, "What is the proper amount of time to wait upon receiving an email containing obviously incorrect statements about Linux kernel code? What is the proper amount of time to wait upon receiving an email containing obviously incorrect..." I think I made a mistake on my copy and paste.
I was going to say, did
so
he...
So, Tony, I will clean that up before I upload that one. But anyway, what is the proper amount of time to wait upon receiving an email containing obviously incorrect statements about Linux kernel code before sending a you-have-got-to-be-kidding email response? And that's it, because this is a jumbled mess, and I'm not going to try and put together anymore.
I don't know what would be the proper amount of time.
I actually commented back on this posting.
The faster
and said,
you respond,
immediate. Yep. I said you pull the trigger right away and call the guy an idiot. That was my answer. Obviously.
Yeah, I think so, because that makes it, not only are you making the statement, but the speed of the response makes a second statement or reinforces it.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome. That's all for the kernel.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The list looks huge, but I'm going to kind of condense it down.
Oh. You're going to condense it down?
Yeah, because
well,
there's
five different Ubuntus.
Five different Ubuntus, yeah.
Oh.
See, there's Ubuntu.
The Ubuntu family
of distributions. They did have a release this week.
Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Zubuntu, Lubuntu, Edubuntu, and Studio. Huh?
We'll be seeing Mint in a few weeks, won't we?
They're usually not that close behind, I don't think.
You're not starting there, right? You're going way further
back. I'm going back, but I'm trying to think. All right, so on the 16th, we have Blink On 8.0. Is that Sajaya? Sajaya? I don't know. S-A-J-A-D-A-H.
It's Sajada.
Sajada. It's an Indonesian distribution.
I don't think that Mary necessarily knows how to pronounce these things better than us. She just makes it up and sounds confident.
Make it up and sound knowledgeable.
Yeah.
I sound like a bakery to me.
Yeah.
Sajada.
So they were,
that's because the bakery
Sajuna.
Is Sajuna.
Sajuna, yeah. Although they're Ubuntu-based, but they released... earlier in the week than Ubuntu did, so I wonder whether they're going off of the 12.4 or the 12.10.
Well,
I didn't look that up yet.
If they released on the 16th and Ubuntu released on the 18th, then they must either use a release candidate of 12.10.
Which by the time of between 16 and 18, how much changed?
Right. Well, yeah, probably exactly. Not much had changed, but all right. And then also on the 16th, we have OpenELEC 2.0, which is XBMC Center, Media Center for home theaters. And I looked into that. I downloaded it, and it looks really interesting. Because they have pre-builds with drivers and stuff for different hardware. And they have the ARM one and x86 and a lot of stuff. So you should check it out. It looks pretty cool. I was thinking about throwing that onto one of my computers because it's supposed to be lightweight. And then on the 17th, NetBSD 6.0 is released.
NetBSD.
NetBSD.
With the slogan, "We run on your refrigerator." That used to be like their thing was that they would run on anything. They would run on more hardware than anything else in the universe.
That was the only thing I could get running on that MIPS computer I had.
Really?
Well, who made it? I can't think of it now, but it was a Unix workstation that I got the BSD NetBSD to run on it. Anyway, so and then on the 18th was the release of Ubuntu 12.10. What's the name again? Kwanzi Kwal? Where's I didn't
something
write that down.
Retarded.
Something retarded.
Is Quantel Quetzal?
Yeah, that's it.
Quantel Quetzal.
What are they going to do when they get to Z? What are they going to do? They picked a stupid naming scheme. Admit it.
I think it's a really good naming scheme.
It's
better than voting for
Fedora, Spherical Cow. Let's hear it.
Yeah, really.
And then then you heard that they've got the name for the next release, for next April's release.
Yes.
Was it Raring Ringtail?
Yep.
It's something, I think it means, I think the ringtail refers to a raccoon.
Yeah, ringtail.
I don't know why they just didn't use the word raccoon.
Because ringtail
because
sounds
cool. Because they're
Ubuntu. Yeah, ringtail does sound cool. And ringtail, I think, used to be an Australian company that... they were involved in some technology. I can't remember what it is, but...
Yeah.
I know is I'm dying of heat prostration.
Continuing
Matt's
on.
His hat off.
I have to. I'm dying.
As I mentioned earlier, we have Ubuntu. These are all on the 18th. Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Zubuntu, Lubuntu, Edubuntu, and
Ubuntu
Studio.
Jubuntu.
I guess we could talk a little bit about what the differences between those are. So Kubuntu is KDE.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Start with Ubuntu.
So Ubuntu is the default is Unity.
Unity.
With the Amazon web shopping experience now.
Right.
They're taking a lot of crap for nothing. I mean,
yeah,
I don't like Ubuntu. And their business model is beyond atrocious. But you got to say when something's wrong, and they're taking a lot of flack for not doing anything wrong.
I don't think it's good.
Did you see the flack they're taking now?
No.
Mark Shuttleworth made this comment on his blog about how they're going to do some not so open development and stuff like that. Nothing wrong with that. Ubuntu can develop any way they want, and they're taking all kinds of flack over
it. Wait a minute.
And
6 months ago, you sat there. Well, no, you actually sat in the other part of the room over here because we were facing the other way at the time. And you were ragging on Shuttleworth and everything because they weren't contributing back.
How Red Hat contributed back more.
Yeah.
Than
well, no, that
else,
was in response to a specific thing that Mark Shuttleworth said, though.
Okay. Sorry, I had that wrong.
It wasn't just a blanket, they don't contribute. It was in response to something Mark Shuttleworth said.
All right.
And, so go on.
But it's just bullshit. They can do whatever they want. And it's not that they're closed-dooring stuff. It's that they're putting stuff out to a smaller community before they broadcast it to the larger community to get some feedback. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a market testing. Everybody does that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I think it's...
You know, and they're... I don't know. Like I said... I am by far not an Ubuntu or Canonical apologist, okay?
We know that.
Right, yeah.
But...
Yeah, I tried to get you to go to the release party last night without telling you that it was a release party. I'm like, hey, come to the brewery with me.
Software might be there. But he sniffed it out.
That's right.
Okay. So on explaining the differences, Ubuntu's Unity, and then
yes. CJ. Hold on.
Kubuntu. Kubuntu, of course, is KDE.
Yep. Then KDE, and then
right back to you, Tony.
Zubuntu or Xubuntu is the XFCE desktop. Lubuntu is the LXDE desktop. Edubuntu is more of a big set of packages than just a desktop.
Right, but it's
It has LTSP, and I know I tried it back when it was GNOME 2, but I'm not sure if they changed to Unity or if they stuck with GNOME 3. And what I'm reading right now doesn't specify the desktop. But the big thing with that is LTSP. So you can run
their
server.
Their desktop is GNOME. They're using GNOME.
Okay. So you can run this as the server and then netboot a computer room. And the teacher can be sitting on a server or whatever the login for the teacher is. Then they can take control of all the desktops to be able to demonstrate things. It's really cool. And LTSP is awesome. In fact, the guy that started LTSP is in the area here.
Yeah, he goes to Mug.
He was at the party last night.
Yeah, he was at the party last night.
Never mind. We won't go into it.
But I'm blanking on his name at the second.
Jim Quillen, right?
Yeah, Jim McQuillan.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do much with it anymore. There's a company that runs that and
his company.
Sells. I don't think... Oh.
He started that company. I don't know if he still is involved with it, but
right.
He started it.
Yeah, he started it. Anyway, and then Ubuntu Studio is also a set of packages. And I had heard they were going to go to XFCE, but I'm not seeing what their desktop is right now. But it's for studio media creation and editing.
It says that they're using XFCE.
It doesn't? I don't see it in... Okay. Oh, yeah, I see it now. Yeah, the updated XFCE for 4.10.
Yeah.
See, and they use the low-latency kernel.
I don't know why these people that try and use a lightweight desktop are all the time, XFCE, XFCE. XFCE drags so much of GNOME in with it. It's not lightweight at all.
You're right. The
LXDE
default setup does, but you can...
You
control.
Can tweak it down.
Yeah, tweak it what is.
How many people using anything Ubuntu are tweaking stuff that far?
I don't know.
Okay. LXDE is a truly lightweight desktop that's very functional. So.
All right. And then also on the 19th was Paralinux 6. They are Ubuntu based, and they're based on the 12.4 LTS. So not the current version released, but the previous. Then we have IP Fire 2.11 Core 63. That's that firewall that was forked off of IPCOP.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
The number 5 is Debian with 1378.
And trending down.
Number 4 is Fedora with 1450.
And trending up.
Number 3 is Magia with 2992.
And trending down.
Number 2 has the leader has been unseated.
Temporarily.
Number 2 is Mint with 3666.
And trending up.
And back at number 1 is Ubuntu with 3819.
And trending up temporarily.
I'm riding those coattails. Even though Kubuntu is way down the list.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's not that far down. It's number 14.
Oh, well, that's not too bad.
Although Zubuntu is higher than Kubuntu.
I don't understand that.
All right. So I think that's it for my distro stuff. So we're having a little bit of mic problems, so hang with us. I'm going to try to clean up as much as you can, as much as I can. But if it doesn't get out very well...
We apologize.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we're going to try to get that buzz out. But we are going to
one of us had a
fix
buzz.
The mic, so here we go.
Mary, what's on SDA6 this week?
Now you're looking at me.
Yeah.
Hey, well, You know, as I said, I was kind of sick this week, but I did manage to do to take a look at a distro, and so I do have a review this week. This is kind of a specialized distro. It's called Turing Linux, T-U-R-I-N-G. Or it's not rocket science, it's computer science. And I lifted that quote directly from the website, which I thought that quote was kind of fun. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll definitely include it. Now, Turing Linux is named after Alan Turing, who was a British mathematician. His claim to fame was his code-breaking skills in World War II. So he did a lot of good work in that area, and also his work, his theoretical work, laid the foundations for computer science. So after I read the bio, I myself felt a little smarter. But now, Turing Linux, I want to share the vitals, of course. The name is Turing Linux. The maintainer, the gentleman's name is Alan, but I'm fairly certain it's not Alan Turing himself, simply because Mr. Turing, or Dr. Turing, is deceased.
Yeah. You know what Turing is most famous for, right? It's the test name, the Turing test.
Well, yeah, there's some stuff on that site. I didn't have a chance really to go into it, but...
Turing test.
No, I was just going to brush right by it. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me.
It's a test to see whether you're a human or a machine on the internet.
Oh.
Like those.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, CAPTCHA.
Yeah.
That is an example of a Turing test.
Okay. Well, good. All right. I hope
the
I passed.
Was because you stifled a sneeze.
Come on. All right. And it's late as birthday, although I found out about it, I think it was October 12th, 2012. It's based on Debian, and the kernel it uses is 2.6.32, which, Matt, I think that means it's using what? Is it Wheezy or, no, Squeeze?
What is it?
2.6.32. That's the stable branch, right, in Debian?
Yeah, that is the current stable, because they haven't released the next one yet.
Yeah, so it's using that. And the review desktop is OpenBox, which is very minimalistic. So, first of all, let's see here. Whoops, I just lost my review. Here we go. Whenever you're going to use a mouse wheel, it always pays not to have your cursor down on the taskbar. But anyway, I'm happy to report that Turing Linux does boot to a live, albeit Spartan, environment. I've already mentioned the desktop is OpenBox. Again, very very sparse desktop. They've got a black background with a picture of a guy who's sitting there, and it looks like he is built from some kind of a 3D printing thing where it's just sort of sliced up, and it's really kind of an interesting picture. And I'm sure it's Alan Turing. It also has a Conky up in the upper left corner of the desktop, and I always like Conky because, you know, it gives you the real-time system monitoring.
Yeah.
So I always feel like I'm at the control panel of some, you know, something really important.
Yeah, Conky's cool.
Yeah. I am going to, and I think you and I talked about that.
Yeah, last night I was telling you that they have a new theme out.
Yeah.
And I set that up on my computer. It looks
really
cool.
I haven't done that yet, but I read about it, and it does sound pretty cool, so I will be checking it out. But anyway, but Conky is sitting there, and that's it. There's nothing else there. The panel at the bottom only has the date and time. So if you like minimalist, you'd like this. Now, Turing Linux is a specialized Linux distro because it itself is probably not a distro that you're going to use for everyday use. What happens with Turing Linux is that it already comes with VirtualBox installed. And so in order to invoke VirtualBox, all you do is open up a terminal and type VirtualBox with an ampersand at the end, and it will take you right to the VirtualBox wizard. Now, the reason why this is set up this way is because TuringBox's maintainer or the developer said that he subscribed to Linux format, and you know how they send out those disks every month, and so he was always trying them, but what was annoying was the fact that he'd always have to reboot. So the reason why he set this up is so that you can try various Linux distros without having to reboot.
Hmm.
And it's really pretty slick because, you know, the site instructed, I opened up a terminal and then typed VirtualBox ampersand, and up it popped. So, again, it'll take you right through it. You can add – I had a – what did I load in there? I ended up loading something. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, it's kind of slick because you can use that to test other distros. I also, before I really completely understood what was going on with Turing Linux, because the site isn't as explanatory as I think it could be, I ended up just installing it right onto the hard drive and then trying it that way. I installed it in a virtual machine, so then it pops up in the virtual machine, and then I did the virtual box, so then the wizard pops up inside there, and I thought, wow, I wonder how far in I could go with that. It's like that mirror thing where you end up with a mirror, reflect.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, once I figured that out, I realized, oh, I just install it on my hard drive, and then from there I can go.
So Turing Linux is more like just an advanced hypervisor?
Yes and no. It's a Debian distro, and I mean
But when you install it, you don't have any tools or anything. Like there's no.
Oh yes, you've got a Debian. You've got the Debian menu with, and you can do apt-get whatever you want to get.
Yeah. But basically, when you just install it,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any. There's no like productivity software or anything like that installed with it.
There's some. But let me just tell you that the default browser is Chrome. There is no Office Suite, no mail client. Default file manager is Thunar.
Yeah, so it's meant to be basically an advanced hypervisor.
I would say it probably is meant to be that way, but you can do more with it. And one of the challenges I had is when I first tried it, the keyboard mapped automatically to the British keyboard, so which is not a problem if you're not going to use the pipe symbol, and if you're going to use the Shift-3 and use the pound symbol, because if you're not going to use either one of those two, then the British keyboard will probably be fine for you.
They don't have the pipe symbol or the pound symbol?
No, well, they may, but it may be mapped somewhere else, or maybe it's a special ASCII key, because when I hit Shift, the backslash key there. Yeah, for the pipe, I got the tilde. So anyway,
what happens when you take the tilde?
I got the tilde. So I had two of them. I know. So then I thought, well, I'm going to get experimental here. I'm really going to ride life on the edge. So I held the shift key down. I went all the way across, with the numbers.
Oh.
And they all pretty much coincide with the exception of the hash, the pound or the pound key. That was a pound key, but it was the British pound. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to kind of get this sorted out. So I joined the forum and posted.
Was the four still the dollar sign?
Yeah.
That's odd, but all right.
Yeah, I think it was. I believe that it was. But anyway, so I joined their forum, posed the question, hey, I didn't notice any option for keyboard mapping, et cetera. Do I have to download a key map and, do whatever? And so then I didn't hear back, so I did my own Googly, and what I found out, and unfortunately it's in my notes that are at home, which I did not bring this morning, there is a reconfigure, depackage.
Yeah, depackage, reconfigure, and then the...
keyboard,
whatever you're trying to bring.
Exactly. So what I did, I had to install console common something or other. Once I installed that, then when I did that depackage command, I then walked through a little ncurses wizard, which allowed me to select. And then I ended up completely rebooting, but I think you could probably get away with just rebooting the X server to get your keyboard, because once that happened, then my keys were all fine. So it was a little extra hoop I had to jump through. I wasn't expected. I would think that what the maintainer is going to need to do is to make sure that...
keyboard selection is in part of the install.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So... Let's see what else I want to say about this. But yeah, it does have a live environment. Now to install it, what you do is you open up the terminal and you type in sudo remaster sysinstaller, I think, and it will take you through the installer. Now it's very, very straightforward, with the exception of when I got to the partitioner, I ended up exiting the installer twice because I'm used to having the partitioner as a separate program and then exiting it and getting back to the install. So I accidentally exited the install when I hit quit. So, just one of those little deals. But that aside, again, it was fairly easy to accomplish. There weren't a lot of interesting programs installed simply because this is such a specialized distro. But again, you have repositories and apt-get install works just fine if you want to load some other stuff in there. But again, Turing Linux is was designed for VirtualBox. So my my rating of Turing Linux, I give it 2.5 cups. No, I'm giving it 2.5 cups because I really like the fact that I could instantly bring up VirtualBox. Just, you know, again, a simple interface, but up pops VirtualBox with just a single command. However, they're going to need to fix the keyboard situation. And I also ran into a couple of problems when I tried to shut it down because the menu says, it says reboot, and it says, I think it says exit. Unfortunately, I don't have it open in front of me. The reboot key doesn't do anything, and I think the exit key just exit, and then you're right back into the interface. So
you
don't exit. You have to go in. You have to open up the terminal, and you have to shut down from there.
Yeah. Weren't you telling me that you were talking to the maintainer, and he gave you one caveat?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yep, because he did respond to, you know, I did post my, I posted my information in the forum, and he responded. He said, because I said, and going back to the keyboard situation, I then reposted to say, oh, never mind, I figured it out. And then he posted, well, share it with us because it might, you know, we're interested in hearing. And so I kind of apologized. And but he went on to say that, you know, please keep in mind that this is alpha software. It's a, you know, it's a, right, kind of a fairly new release. And so it's, but they're interested in people trying it out. And again, I to test it out for VirtualBox, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it. So, but again, keeping the alpha aspect of it in perspective. So that's why I give it 2.5. I like the fact that you can get VirtualBox running very easily, and that gives you an entree to try other Linux distros. So
cool.
Yeah, so that was Turing Linux. And the links to that information will be in the show notes.
All
Tony,
right,
as soon as I get home and post them.
Yeah. So anyway, it may be after the original post of the show, but depending on how fast Mary can get home.
Yeah. Oh, I can get home if I don't get stopped by the cops. I can get home pretty fast.
Although I wanted to have you guys edit the show because I may not be here. We are within. I meant to talk about this at the very beginning. I forgot about it, but we're within the 2 weeks. And for those of you guys out there that don't have a kid, probably don't understand this, but so I'll explain it. So when
how much detail are you going to go into, Tony?
Whoa,
not the birth.
Well,
refers to the crown of the head.
No.
TMI. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have said that.
No, actually, when they give you the due date, because you know my wife is pregnant. They give you the due date, and...
No!
Well, we didn't talk about it much, so I didn't know if, right, if any new listeners...
He's turning red, Nat.
All right.
It has to do with the temperature of the room.
I know, I took my coat off.
Oh, my God.
So,
I took my coat off. It feels better.
So they actually say a baby's full term from 2 weeks before to 2 weeks after the due date. So my wife's due date is November 2nd, and so right now we're within the 2 weeks. So I could be getting a message anytime saying I got to leave and go to the hospital. So it could be during the show.
I have my cell phone jammer on. You're getting no messages until you're done editing.
Yeah, so I'm trying to teach these guys how to record, post, and everything with the show. So so we'll see how that goes. Although Matt says he's not doing any editing. Just the raw feed's getting out.
The raw file. You guys are just going to get a two-hour-long show with all the crap.
All our outtakes in the show,
yeah,
not,
the
at
show
the
not at the end.
All right. Oh,
so that
you
was
know,
about it? Huh?
Yeah, that was it for Turing Linux. But I've talked a little bit, I think, on a previous show or two about a project I was considering doing, and that was Linux from scratch. And so I'm gonna go ahead and try to build a Linux system from scratch using the Linux from scratch handbook. Of which I printed out.
It looks like is that like 150 pages?
No, this is
double-sided.
This is not the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
This is 230 pages double-sided. And for those of you in the Hangout, I'm holding it up here. You can see how much is in here. It's double-sided. Let me tell you, that was a tough to print, too.
How much of the book is that?
There's 350 pages.
Oh, my God.
So that's why it's going to... I don't have time to do this in 1 week, because I know I'm going to be very slow about it. I got to read this thing. But I've already... What I've already done is I've already... and I'm going to build this on Chakra Linux. I decided to really get risky. But I've already confirmed... I've checked... there are certain prerequisites that I got to have on my system because you have a host system. You've got to have a separate partition to build this thing. And I've already confirmed that I've got everything I need with the exception of Gawk, which I think is the GUI front end for Awk. Mm. So I'm going to make sure that that's installed.
So you have to have an already running Linux computer to be able to install it?
Yeah, you have to compile.
How are you
going to
compile the kernel?
I don't know. Can you do it from a live CD? Because I know Gen 2, you can run it from a live CD. That's how you install Gen 2.
Yeah.
Total bootstrap.
And they have got a list that's pages long of all the files I have to download.
Really?
Here, look, see?
No dependency download?
I suspect there's something. Believe me, you're going to hear about it. But you can see, look at all this. It's just all these files.
Page and page.
I know. There's just page after page after page of files.
They don't
have
like one big archive you can just download?
No. I have to go to all these different sites. Wow. Apparently. So anyway, that's why I'm going to go ahead and give this a try. Tom Shane was emailing me. He wanted to know what the status was. I said, well, I'm still preparing. And he said he was disappointed. And he had a funny comment in Google Plus about that he had given it a try. And I think what happened is... from what he's told me, if I can find it, I think.
Hey, Mary.
Yeah?
Gawk is just the GNU user's guide for Awk.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. I hadn't even.
Whoa, that was me.
I knew it wasn't me. I hadn't even looked that up yet, so that's good. So I may not even need the user guide. Who reads instructions? Okay, I will be, let me tell you. So anyway, but I'm going to go ahead and kind of report over the next few weeks what's going on with that. But I will continue to do a distro review each week, too, so that if I don't haven't made any headway on Linux from scratch, I have something to say.
It's just a re-implementation of Awk.
Okay.
It's easy with Awk, especially with the GNU implementation, Gawk. So Gawk is the GNU implementation of Awk. Whatever that means.
I think it means that there's only free software in there or something, or free code or something. So, yeah, so that was the only thing I was missing, which I thought was pretty good because I had everything else. So, and I already set up the partition.
Cool.
And I'll be starting it this week.
All right.
On my Bemis hosting laptop. All right. Thank you. And that's it for me.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
I have a couple of stories. The first is about the death of Windows. Is Windows 8 the death knell for Windows? Yes, says Mark Benioff, CEO of Salesforce.com. Benioff has restated his position that the Windows era is over following his keynote at CloudForce 2012 on October 19th. During a press conference, he said he has heard from numerous CIOs who are not going to move to Windows 8. He even cited one CIO in particular who said Windows was the largest security concern in her organization. She went on to say that rather than move to Windows 8, that they would be looking at moving to a BYOD approach. Benioff said this concerning the move to Windows 8. The big catalyst of the next shift in the enterprise is Windows 8. People are asking, do I go to Windows 8 or not? This was not the case with Windows 7. You heard about the Windows 7 upgrade cycle. You're not going to hear about the Windows 8 upgrade cycle. This is the end of Windows.
So BYOD, bring your own device?
Yeah.
I don't think that's very secure.
Yeah, well, it depends on how you do it. Because what you would do is the device wouldn't have full reign on the network. It would be segregated out. Like, it would have access to shares and be able to read and write shares and things like that, but it wouldn't be like a joined device to the domain or something, you know?
Yeah, but that's still, I mean, if somebody has to use it as their work machine, I mean, I don't understand bring your own device for a work machine.
I know I don't have to be logged into our VPN or on the domain to get access to a lot of corporate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to supply my credentials, but
Well, yeah, and I understand for remote users, because you're that's a segregated network to begin with, because you're
are you
VPN-ing.
Serious? I am.
You're segregated.
I thought I was like part of the company.
But yeah. But if you're like
even in house people here, like if you're on a machine that's part of my network, mm-hmm. you have way more access.
Way too much time on your hands.
No, you have way more access than if you're BYOD, because I have some teachers that BYOD, and then they have access to the shares, and all they can do is read and write to the shares. They can't access anything else on the network.
Oh, all right.
So
yeah, and I know that some of our customers, they have their employees that they're allowed to bring their own devices, and I know that our product that's on a server on their domain, that it's difficult for these folks to get to it because of the fact that they're kind of segregated. So yeah. I think they're going to have to really think about how, if they're going to really go with bring your own device, they're going to really need to rethink the resources that are out there and how those employees are going to access them, or if they're going to access them, and whether it makes sense.
Well,
to
how does your them. How does your stuff work? Is it just like a database of all of Westlaw that
it's just is, a web
a database of all of Westlaw and a database of their local of their in-house knowledge base?
Yeah, it's
well, that's a server backend, but
it's
I mean their interface that
they access it through a browser.
Yeah, it's just a web interface.
But so.
And the browser can't access it.
Yeah, I mean they have got access. There's a certain aspect to it, and again, I don't. I'm trying to think back to.
Well, and you don't
want to
give away any of your proprietary stuff. So
yeah, good air quotes, Matt. But I remember there was some aspect to it, the fact that they were not on their network or they were accessing it through an iPad, kind of put them off in this little area, and so they didn't have full access to something. And I'm trying to remember what it was. It was a while back when I encountered this a few months ago.
Now I have a question. When they're using your
stuff,
your front end, whatever. Does that web page ask for credentials, or does it authenticate them through like LDAP or Kerberos?
It authenticates through
Active Directory.
Through Active Directory.
Yeah.
We have another way of authenticating people too, but if you're not using Active Directory, but about 99% of our customers use it.
Yeah, but through the web interface, you just log 95%. In there. I guess you could use the Windows single sign-on.
Yeah, and it's transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
It
okay.
is transparent. People, there is a table that. That
right.
Has
yeah, but
their
if you're,
stuff in it,
your Windows,
their login, their domain name, yeah. login, and as long as that matches,
right? Okay.
The assumption is
that.
This is a Windows.
Yeah,
this is a Windows Active Directory them. Discussion here.
Yeah, let's continue on.
I've heard the word Kerberos. I've heard it mentioned a few times.
Actually, Kerberos is open.
Yeah, it's open. But it's what Microsoft uses
LDAP,
for us.
Yeah, but LDAP uses Kerberos also for authentication.
Oh,
right?
It does. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty
I thought
sure it
LDAP
does.
used its own kind of LDAP-y thing.
If I remember right, LDAP came up with it first.
Oh, really?
If I remember right. I could be
You could
wrong,
be wrong.
I have no idea. I
Wouldn't
used,
be the first time.
I haven't used any of it.
Yeah.
I use Samba as an authentication tool. So, anyway, at his keynote, he listed the different eras of computing as the 1960s as the mainframe era, the 70s was mini computing, the 80s was the era of client servers, then cloud computing in the 90s, on to mobile computing in the 2000s, and social computing in the 2010s.
Cloud computing in the 90s?
I know. I thought it was a bit odd myself. I thought 90s was still client server. As a matter of fact, I thought 90s was more client server than 80s.
Yeah, really. 80s
was still kind of mini computing. With some desktops coming in, but they were really standalone. They weren't really working in a client-server operation, you know.
Unless you were thinking of people who dialed in through those little modem things, you know, you'd have the keyboard. I can remember that way back in the day. You'd have those Texas Instrument, you know, those. You have an acoustic coupler where you stick your phone in.
Yeah, I used an acoustic coupler.
And you had this little keyboard thing, and you would connect up, and all the data was in.
Yeah.
The data center.
That was more of the mainframe era, though.
Yeah. Okay. Did he list the mainframe era?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I guess it was. Yeah, but yeah, cloud just seems a little odd to me. I guess you have to figure out what his definition of cloud is. I think we talked about that far more than we expected to.
A little bit. And then he went on to say that another major point in this shift is the change in IT leadership. The next generation of leaders has come up, and the last generation is going out. A lot of the people who made that Oracle or Microsoft purchase decision are no longer there. The new people in there are modern, up-to-date, and they have a new brand preference. How they view technology is different. Let's hope that Benioff is right. Then, next up, we have the OSI Oshawa logo controversy put to an end. The Open Source Hardware Association, Oshawa, and the Open Source Initiative, OSI, have signed an agreement settling their dispute over Oshawa's logo. When Oshawa launched back in June, the OSI immediately filed a complaint that their logo was too similar, and if you have ever seen them side by side, you can understand why.
Yeah, yeah, I look at them next to each other, and they are very similar. Yeah. Same little niche at the bottom.
Yeah,
the
same. The key slot's exactly the same. They're both circles, and Oshawa.
One is blue and one is green.
Yeah, and right. Oshawa just added those gears around the edge, and it's not a lot. But they have come to a mutual agreement on the use of each respective logo. Under trademark law, similar logos are only a problem when there's a significant chance of confusion. To alleviate that chance of confusion, the agreement between the two parties lays out a very specific rules of use. What this agreement boils down to is that the OSI logo should only be used to denote software, whereas the Oshawa logo is to be used exclusively for hardware. Whew! Catastrophe averted.
Wow.
Hey, going back to that Kerberos thing,
yes.
I just looked it up on Wikipedia. It was developed by MIT, and version 5 came out in 93. Windows didn't start using it until Windows 2000. So, yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
I think Novell was one of the first ones using it, if I remember right. I can't.
Oh, Novell Networks.
I don't see, yeah. Maybe. But it says now it's used by Oracle, Apple, Google, Microsoft, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Cool. So, Mary, you had some stuff, didn't you? Or you had your KDE corner?
Oh, my KDE corner. Yes, and as a matter of fact, while I speak slowly, I'm going to open it very quickly here. Yes, I do. This coming Thursday is going to be the soft feature freeze for KDE SC 4.10. And again, this milestone is anticipation of a January 23rd 2013, although I typed 2012, release of KDE 4.10. And we will have to seriously consider a KDE release party in January.
Yeah, January. Everybody come out to the Detroit Brewery. What is it called?
We'll figure it out. Is it Motor City Brewery?
Yeah, that's it.
I have no idea.
I just know where it is. I know it's got beer.
That's right. Ghetto Blaster.
Yep. All I know is that I pay $5 to park in the parking lot so that after we're done, I can go out and go to sleep.
Speaking of beer, last night I had some, and they didn't have any stouts, and so I was upset.
And that's not a bad thing.
That's my favorite. They had.
I call that syrup beer.
I had some Oktoberfest, and that wasn't bad. But then I had Double Dark IPA. That was
dark IPA.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That was the
word. How do you have dark and
black
ale
or
in
something
the same word?
They called it.
And it was an IPA.
Yeah. And that was the worst beer I've ever had.
I can believe that.
I just don't like it.
Do you think somebody mixed two beers together and just said, "Hey, there you go"?
That's what they made.
Or they brew it from scratch.
I don't like IPAs, and then that was even amplified. So I had choked it down because I was already paying $6.50 for the beers. So. Anyway.
Yeah, but they were big glasses.
Yeah.
All right. Well, continuing on with my KDE info, KDE actually recently had a birthday. It celebrated its sweet 16.
Yeah.
Birthday, I think around October 14th, and then back in 1996, Matthias Ettrich released the first version of KDE. I've got a link to that information in my show notes. Also, there was a release of KEXI 2.5.3. which is the database component to CalligraOffice. There'll be a link to that. And then one other thing I wanted to mention is that there was a premature release, the release that wasn't, as I call it, and that's fans and users of Kubuntu. They probably had a moment or two of confusion when the Kubuntu 12.10 release announcement was published a day early.
A day early.
As it turns out, it happened to be a premature publication. of that, and that's, again, somebody inadvertently had the published checkbox marked and hit it. So they quickly sent out a second one that clarified that, oh, no, it really isn't released, but here's what happened.
Right.
And then the last thing is Caligra Word Generator for Ocular. I mentioned that not so much for the Caligra Words Generator for Ocular, but just for Ocular itself, because I wanted to give a little mention of Ocular as a... I use it as a PDF reader, and I wasn't... I feel like breaking into a dance, Tony, but we'll keep going. So anyway, I use Ocular as a PDF reader mostly, and I was not aware of the fact that it will open and allow you to view a host of file types. Now, for everyone's convenience, I've gone ahead and took some screenshots of the dropdown, so I'd shift it, and I've got five different screenshots of what is available. I mean, we're talking things from PostScript files to encapsulated PostScript files to, of course, PDF, to the the WWF document, which, again, I don't know what that is.
The World Wildlife Fund?
Worldwide, or was it World Wrestling Federation?
Yeah, but they can't do that anymore. They had to change their name to the WWE.
Oh, did they?
They did. They got sued by the World Wildlife Fund.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I had no idea. I don't follow them. Just kidding. Wow. Anyway, yeah. So GIF. Tony, are you going to have to run off?
I it was my boss, so.
Oh.
It wasn't my wife, so I think we're safe for now.
All right, so anyway.
Your wife's not your boss?
Well, it seems right, like so it most of the time.
Moving on. But anyway, so GIMP images, JPEGs, TIFF. I've got it listed here. It's pretty amazing. So if, you know, you use Ocular, but you only use it for PDFs, just keep that in mind. You might want to chase your file
association. I don't know. I've never found Ocular to be a good PDF reader. I much prefer Adobe Reader.
Excuse me. I mean, not excuse me for what you said, yeah. But I had to cough there.
No. So I'm confused. What is a... what do they call it? A word generator? Or why are we dinging?
Right.
They call it, what did they call it? A word generator? Or
for Ocular, right. What I wasn't really talking about that. That was the catalyst for me to talk about Ocular just in general.
You know, but yeah, Ocular is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I ran into a problem with Ocular. And not with Ocular per se, but with me testing.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, I thought I'd print to PDF. And this was back when I first started doing it on Linux. And so I thought, I'll print PDF. Oh, right there. It says save as a file instead. So I'd save my web whatever as a file.
Did you rename
instead
it?
Of
instead of the default file name?
Yeah. I renamed it and everything. And then I tried to email it to somebody, and it wasn't a PDF. Although Ocular brought it up fine. I loved it.
Oh, you know what
great.
It was? It was a PostScript file.
Yeah. It was a PostScript file. So all my Windows friends couldn't open it. So I had to go through and install the PDF printer.
Did you explain to them that just shows the superiority of Linux?
I thought Cups came with a PDF printer built into it.
Not built in.
No.
But it is available. Yeah, you just need to set it up. And at the time, I didn't know how to do that either, so it was just an app to get through Ubuntu, though, with the PDF printer. Anyway, so yeah, Ocular is superior to
it is
a lot of other things, so it's very nice.
Definitely. All right, so that's my news this week.
The only thing I found, and we already talked about it a little bit earlier, but was the new name for Ubuntu. And
Raccoon Coat.
Raring Ringtail.
Retarded.
And so there's a link in the show notes.
All right.
But I think that's about
it for
news.
You didn't
point. Huh?
You didn't point.
Link in the show notes. Because they can't see it behind the box.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Time for this week's segment of Is It Alive? Or Is It Rocket Science? During this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. We twist the concept this week when I challenge Matt and Tony to decide whether the named entity is a Linux rocket science or whether...
Is Linux rocket science?
I'm sorry, is rocket science Linux? In other words, is it a Linux distro that's for rocket science?
Oh.
It's like scientific Linux, you know, that kind of thing. Or whether I've made it up.
for rocket science? I didn't know they had distros that were specifically for rocket science. This is going to be
well, and I use the term rocket science in a broad kind of, I broadly apply it.
Okay.
And you'll see in a moment.
All
Matt is looking very suspicious.
Sure, I understand the rules. We have to say whether it's a Linux distribution designed for rocket science or whether you made it up.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, that's basically it.
Oh, okay.
So it's not.
Wait, before we go on, I need more Java.
All right, go ahead.
So it's either made up or it's a distro.
That's right.
For
rocket science.
But it won't be like straight Ubuntu because Ubuntu is not for rocket science, so that's not on your list.
No.
Okay.
So.
But she didn't make that up either.
Right. Well, that's my question. It makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, so I've got five of them this week.
If it is a real Linux distribution. So basically, is it a real Linux distribution or did you make it up?
Yeah, but it's not just a general. It's just a rocket science. I mean, there's
okay, I get
it's yeah, it's got that angle to it. Because believe me, I had to work to get this morning, as you saw before we went live. All right, so you ready?
I am.
All right.
Born ready.
The first one is Fermi Linux.
Fermi.
For
Linux.
Me, for
oh,
you,
man.
for all of
I
us.
I actually believe this is a real distribution.
Do you? I'm going to say it's too local for us for it to be an actual distro, so I'm going to say no. Because the reason I say it's local is because there's two nuclear power plants in Michigan, Fermi and Fermi 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Fermi 2 is within 25 miles of us.
And it almost blew up, didn't it? There was a book that came out, We Almost Lost Detroit.
That's bullshit, but go on.
Yeah, there was.
I know.
Actually, Fermi had a 1. Drill. They had a drill about it. But anyways, continue.
You thought it was a drill. It was real. All right. So, and again, Fermi, Enrico Fermi, was an Italian.
I know who Enrico Fermi was.
All right, very good. It's science. So it is. Fermi Linux is the generic name for Linux distributions that are created and used at Fermi National Accelerator Lab. So they're known by not only that name.
They make them in-house.
Yeah. Fermi Linux, Fermi Linux LTS. Oh, maybe it's based on Ubuntu. And then Scientific Linux Fermi, SLF, and STS. So these are all different Linux distros.
I knew
I'd
heard
And they're called Fermi Linux. So.
All right. Dang it, man.
Okay, Tony, so unfortunately you're one behind.
Did you want any Joe before I finish off the pot?
No. That's okay. We're going to move on. Hadron Linux or Hadron Project.
Not.
Yeah, not.
It is.
Oh.
I knew they used
it's
Linux.
It's a GNU Linux, the Hadron.
I thought they used Scientific, though.
Yeah. It's called the Hadron.
Yeah, I know they used Scientific, but I didn't know they had another.
It was designed to provide,
for the controller.
I don't know if they're using it. Well, actually, it's called the Hadron Project. But I have a link to it in the show notes, so it is legit. Next one is Fission Linux. How do you spell Fission?
No.
Fission?
No. I say no.
I'm going to go yes.
I made it up.
Oh. I'm bombing out this week.
Hey. All right. What did you say for Hadron? You said no, right?
I said no.
Okay. And you said no?
I said it was.
Okay.
No, Hadron, you said no.
Oh, right.
Okay, so you both were wrong on that.
Yeah, for Fission, he said yes.
That's right.
Okay.
So it's currently 2-0.
Oh, no.
All right. So how about... You ready for this?
Ready.
Proton Linux.
No.
I'm going to say yes.
It's not science. I made it up.
Oh.
3-0. There's no coming back.
Fusion Linux.
Yes.
I think there is. Although I wanted to be opposite of Matt, but I think it is.
Pays not to go opposite Matt. It is a real Linux distro, and it's actually based on Fedora. So, but, you know, the fact that it was Fusion Linux, I thought, yeah, that's got a science ring to it. So, yeah, I said science.
All right.
So I guess, Matt, you won again this week.
Oh. 4-0.
No, you got one.
No.
No.
That last one I thought you did.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the last one you did because you agreed with me. Yep. I'm sorry. 4-1.
I said it pays to. Matt, you're so generous.
Well,
all right.
I was wrong.
Okay, well, good for us and good for you. And join us next week for another edition of Is It Alive?
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
I sent you an email, Mary. It was a conversation I had in our IRC channel. And
Zest Linux?
Yeah. Who was that? That
anyway.
Claudio M.
Yeah, as I said, okay. Claudio. I thought it was Claudio. Yeah, it had to do with Zest Linux, yes. Which I think
you,
I reviewed a
you
couple.
You got him to try it.
Yeah. Well, I think what I think it was the tiling window manager.
Correct.
And not only that, but, you know, at work, we've got our internet, intranet kind of social media thing going at work. What we did is we used to have all these little wiki sites at work. So, you know, we had our own wiki site, which I managed. And they went got away from that and put this new site in place that's really company-wide.
With the different departments having sections? Or
yeah. And so there's the Linux group because we run a bunch of SUSE Linux servers, I found out. So I joined that group.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And what I, the reason why I'm saying this, I'm going to bring it full circle back, is because and the one of the guys in that site, that Linux, that internal Linux site, was talking about window managers, and he uses one called i3, which I have never heard of. So, and I is in the letter i3. So if Claudio, if he Googles that, he can check out another window manager. So,
cool.
Yeah. So that, I'm glad somebody listen or maybe takes action on those reviews.
Actually, there's a lot of people I've heard that talk about your review over like other parts of our shows. So I think your stuff you do on the show is the most popular of our regular, and like what people talk about. Like
so you're saying I'm not just another pretty face?
You definitely bring a lot to our show.
Oh, well, thanks. I know, and that's why those reviews, I kind of get a kick out of them, too. And I know you guys get a kick out of them, and sometimes we have a little conversation about them. But anyway, so good.
Yeah, it's nice. Let's see. I don't think we got any emails.
No.
I'm trying to think.
I did not see a single
and
one.
And no one's calling in on our phone, either.
No one.
No.
I'm going to make
our Netherlands friend was the last one to call in on the phone. Oh,
yeah.
No, he didn't call him on the phone. He sent that audio clip to us. So.
Yeah, I'm going to make an outbound call too, just to make sure that thing stays okay.
Cool.
Featured music of the week.
Tony's looking at me like,
what part of the show?
What part of the show is that?
That's what I
the part with the music?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you have music, Tony?
I don't.
This is the end.
This is the end.
My friend.
Or Matt. It's either you find music, Tony, or Matt.
Or I sing the end by the Doors.
Really quick. Music suggestions.
Hey, yeah, go to my...
Sad Passengers Waltz by the Freak Fandango Orchestra.
Oh, the Freak Fandango Orchestra. They're cool.
Yeah, yeah. And we played one song earlier by them, and I liked them. So
I don't get to sing the end?
No.
No.
Hmm.
Cut his mic, Tony, just to make sure.
And he walked on down the hall.
Oh, man, I'll have to go home and listen to Jim Morrison.
All right. So take a listen.
I drink all my old liquors. Tomorrow may fall away. Raise your glasses. I drink all my old liquors. Tomorrow may fall away.
and some that I lose us, but all of them forgotten will be. Today you drink with me, tomorrow there will be no one to remember my name. Not on a race. Your glasses in ink will be only just tomorrow. I'll be put away. Race. Your glasses in ink will be only just tomorrow. To get restless my heart, unrestless my soul. So do me a favor and fill up your glasses. Be sure that there will be someone to pay. Your glasses I drink will be all the cuss. Tomorrow I'll be far away. Race. Your glasses I drink will be all the cuss. Tomorrow I'll be far away. Glasses I drink will be all the cuss. Tomorrow I'll be far away. Race. Your glasses I drink will be all the cuss. Tomorrow I'll be far away. Ain't always that easy in love. May come and may go, so drink as long as there's someone to pay.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 54.
The episode that shall remain nameless.
Yeah, unnamed or something like that. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.